Scott Parkinson from the Club for Growth. He's been monitoring the presidential campaign for us all year. It's time for the candidates to make their closing arguments. Scott, usually candidates end their campaigns not on a negative note, but on an aspirational note. We're not seeing that from Kamala Harris and the Democrats. Want to give us your take on the closing arguments of the presidential candidates?
Well, we're less than 2 weeks out from the election. And, you know, you got Trump and Harris barnstorming all across America, hitting up the swing states, giving high-profile interviews and speeches, trying to reach other disconnected and forgotten voters and run up the early vote counts as much as they can, because obviously they'll want to keep counting ballots after Election Day, right? But I think it's interesting because the Harris campaign is trying to throw stuff up against the wall and see if anything will stick against Trump. And if you remember this in 2016, and I think to a degree in 2020, no matter how Trump was attacked, he can basically shed any of those attacks off fairly easily and flip the script. This week, we heard the Democrats say that Trump's a fascist, and they rolled out his former chief of staff, John Kelly, saying that Trump praised Hitler. And now they're comparing Trump to Hitler. And then they bring out new sexual allegations of groping from a former model that was introduced to him by Jeffrey Epstein. And I think that it's this desperation of Kamala Harris to try to mix the message away from her record and hope that American people will fall for the trap and take the bait on something controversial and hope that there's this October surprise. But the reality is that all this fake nonsense that they're putting out there, you know, starting with John Kelly, it's been refuted by, you know, Mark Meadows and Nick Ayers, who was Mike Pence's chief of staff. Other senior officials in the Trump administration have said, of course, he didn't say this. And then you had the situation where he apparently disparaged the murdered veteran. And I just think that this is ultimately the Democrats really in panic mode. And when you look at the Trump campaign, he's having fun. He was at the drive-thru with McDonald's. He's, you know, just out there in a way that people kind of appreciate. And when Donald Trump gets back to the message of the Biden administration has ruined the economy, the Biden administration has let over 10 to 15 million illegal aliens cross the border, making crime higher, making you less safe and secure. And then you look at the forever war positions of Kamala Harris campaigning alongside everybody's least favorite neocon, Liz Cheney, that ultimately it's going to backfire on the Democrats. And Trump is headed to a big, big win. I think he's going to get over 320 electoral votes. And he's going to do that by not just winning states that he lost last time from Georgia and North Carolina, Pennsylvania, but he's also going to be, I think, picking up places like Nevada, Arizona, Wisconsin, and Michigan. Maybe he doesn't sweep every single one of those states, right? We know that these are close. We know that they're going to come down to a few thousand votes here and there in some of these bellwether counties. But the message to suburban voters, I think, has been pretty solid. One of the big ads that's out there that the Trump campaign is running in swing states is that Trump is for you, but Harris is for they, them. And they have elevated this issue of men competing in girls' sports and social issues that I think really concern a lot of parents in schools. School choice is still a big issue. We all learned our lesson, I think, during COVID to the indoctrination that's happening front and center with kids. But, you know, ultimately the economy, immigration, those are big, big issues that the Trump campaign is going to win on because they're right on the policies and Kamala is desperate.
Speaking of desperation, it's interesting in a couple of these swing states, we also have U.S. Senate races that have become very highly competitive, especially in the states of Michigan and Pennsylvania. Interesting, Scott, that the Democrat candidates are now praising their cooperation with Donald Trump in their advertising. Is that sort of a bellwether as well?
It's fascinating because you're fighting over this group of undecided voters in the middle. It's not like somebody that's a radical leftist is still considering whether to vote for the Democrat. And I think it's the same thing on the far right. You know, they're pretty much locked in with the America First MAGA conservative vote that is for Trump. But there are independent voices that want to see candidates for the U.S. Senate work across the aisle. And these independent voters are receiving a message in Pennsylvania right now from Bob Casey that he agrees with Trump, that he wants to, you know, fight back against China. And then they're receiving a similar message in Michigan from Alyssa Slotkin, who I think is a crazed liberal just as much as any of the rest of them. But they're trying to appeal to independent voters right now. And when you know that this is a 1 or 2% race, that's the, you know, I think the smart play by some of these consultants. My hope is that voters actually look at records, and Bob Casey and Alyssa Slotkin in Michigan, those two have a number of far left votes that really reveal where their allegiance is and how far the Democrat Party has also shifted. You know, the if you think about where the political middle was, it has definitely gone to the left over the last 16 years since Barack Obama won in 2008. And, you know, a lot of people have to wonder if they're going to be comfortable with that. I think that's why you have sort of like a traditional Reagan Democrat coming out for Donald Trump along the Rust Belt, especially, you know, states like Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, that he did so well in 2016, but not so well in 2020. Those are the big questions. We've also got huge, huge voter turnout efforts right now. You and I have a mutual friend, Cliff Maloney, who's running the PA Chase to try to get people registered in Pennsylvania. Well, voter registration just closed. They finished that work. And now it's all about making sure that people show up and cast their ballot, early voting, mailing it in, or voting on election day.
And Scott, also in the upper Midwest, we have quite a pitched battle for a U.S. Senate seat in Wisconsin. How is that shaping up?
Well, there you have a career politician, Tammy Baldwin, who, again, is another one of these far-left senators. She's been in office, I think, since 1996, serving in the House and then serving the last couple of terms in the U.S. Senate. She was a longtime Madison City Councilwoman and just really representing what the progressive base is from Wisconsin. And she's running against a businessman, Eric Hovde. Hovde's sort of had a lot of fun with his campaign. He's got a lot of real momentum, and it gives us a shot to, you know, not only have a couple of Senate pickups when it comes to Montana and West Virginia, which we previously discussed, but also to start picking up some seats. Maybe we pick up Wisconsin. Maybe we pick up Nevada or Arizona. Maybe we do well, and we actually win with Dave McCormick in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. These races are so close. And so the final stretch, the final message that candidates are giving voters, it really does matter. But I would also remind all these candidates and remind voters to remember what the message of the last 18 months has been about and not to fall for any misinformation that might come out right at the end.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. As always, Scott, tell us a little bit about the club.
Well, Club for Growth is based in Washington, D.C., boasting over 525,000 members from all 50 states in the country. And you can check us out at clubforgrowth.org.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. Well, Scott, down to the last week. We'll talk to you again then. Thank you.
You're welcome.